Yo, what is going on, everybody? You're listening to 91.7 FM, WYXR, and this is the Audio Box with Devin Germain. And I am here with a special guest, Alicia Renee, aka Blue Eyes. Welcome, Alicia.
Hi, how are you? Greetings from New Orleans.
New Orleans, yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah, Alicia is home from New Orleans, and she studied at Flint Institute of Music, and she studied vocals, piano, flute, clarinet, and trumpet, and she has performed all around the world, including London, Switzerland, and she has a lot of music experience, and knows a lot of musical people in New Orleans and all around the world. So, yeah, welcome, Alicia.
Thank you for having me.
I guess to start off, can you explain, I guess, what inspired you to get into music initially?
Well, I mean, like a lot of people that I know, I was raised in the church, and I've been singing since I was 2 years old and singing in the choir since six. So, and studying, as you mentioned, I'm originally from Flint, Michigan. And that's where I started, you know, honing my musical skills first in church and then at the Flint Institute of Music, where I studied piano, opera. So I had a definite, like, eclectic background when it comes to music, which I'm sure a lot of people that live in America have. Dad was a jazz head. He was, you know, he would come home from working at General Motors and go straight to the Sunroom and play Nat King Cole and Sarah Vaughan and Ella Fitzgerald and Miles Davis and on and on. And mommy was the one that in the morning was playing either gospel, some sort of gospel, Mahalia Jackson, or straight classical music. So that's where the inspiration comes from, home first.
And then along the way, how was it like just trying to get into the musical field? And I know you said you were an independent artist. What kind of made you kind of realize that you just want to be an independent artist as well?
Great question. Well, because I always, from a child, always either was taught or observed to learn from those that come before you. And some of the great people that I admired, such as Prince or TLC, or Toni Braxton, even Mary J. Blige, we can go on and on and on. I mean, my number one favorite artist of all time is Aretha Franklin, but that's because I've seen her do. Yeah, I have seen her do most things that I have never seen others do, from, of course, gospel to jazz to R&B albums. But it sealed the deal for me when Luciana Pavarotti got sick for 1 year for the Oscars and asked her to, at the very last minute day of, could you please do Nessa Andurma? And when I saw her do that and cover that song, that beautiful opera song, I said, okay, that's it. That's my hero. I love her. Went for, you know, musical reasons. That's my hero, you know, because I just thought she was amazing. But watching, going back to the question you asked, paying attention to all those names I just mentioned, Mary J. Blige, Toni Braxton, TLC, Prince, watching Prince write Slave on his face and wondering why and investigating and finding out the answer to the reason why, because the record labels basically owned his music. watching Toni Braxton on an Oprah Winfrey show back in the day, for those of you who are like, who's Oprah Winfrey? But anyway, I'm sure everybody knows who Oprah Winfrey is. But watching Toni Braxton tell Oprah, like, they took everything, including my Grammys, to TLC saying, let us break down, when they said it on MTV. You can go on YouTube and find these interviews. Let me break down how an artist can sell 10 million albums and still be broke. Watching A Tribe Called Quest go on MTV and said, yeah, after selling millions and millions of albums, we walked away with $3,000 each. Watching, I mean, I can go on and on, but my point is I paid attention to these artists. And at the same time, I started watching a lot of artists go an independent route, rather it be Annie DeFranco or Master P with the distribution to, you know, we can go on and on. I said, okay, the bag is bigger when you're independent, and nobody, especially coming from where we come as African-American people, wants to be owned any longer. Yeah. And so I've always been attracted to being free and for obvious reasons. I'm a human and I'd like to be free. And I saw that I could be a little bit more successful and free with the choice of music that I want to do to the financial compensation. No one can say, well, I'm the reason why you're on TV. I'm the reason you have this dress on. I'm the reason you're in that magazine. So you have to pay us back before you get one dime. And a lot of people, like I said before, are like, okay, Mary J. Blige, she tells a lot of people after her first two albums went platinum, she was still living in the projects. So I pay attention to those stories and I pay attention. And I was just like, yeah, I think I'll go the independent route. Plus, I have to say that my parents definitely instilled in me not keeping up with the Joneses, which means it's cute. And now I'm sure a lot of people, I think 75 million people so far have seen that Cat Williams interview on Shannon Sharp that, you know, he did at the beginning of the year come into fruition, where all that glitters isn't gold. And I've made in my own little independent way videos about that from time to time as well. Like, hey, you know, don't all that glitters ain't gold. Don't keep up with the Joneses. It's cute to say, oh, I'm on a club. I'm singing on a club. Yeah. I'm in a club. But it's not cute to, hey, can I crash on your couch? Because, you know, the tips weren't that good. And they said the bar didn't make. No, you know, so that's really what a lot of, it's not just ever one thing, but that those are a few reasons why I made the decision to be an independent artist.
Yeah, because I remember, oh, by the way, for context, guys, we met when I visited New Orleans.
Yeah, so I saw in the you French performing. Quarter.
Yeah.
Right in the French Quarter.
Some background on it. Because you were selling your albums and you were performing. So then I was like, huh. So then, you know, you had the QR code. So then I scanned and I was like, oh, so now I was like, yeah, I got an interview here.
Oh, thank you.
But yeah, when we were talking, you said that you didn't want to perform inside venues or I guess restaurant areas because they didn't pay enough, right?
Well, almost I said something similar to that. Basically, I was saying I do better as an independent outside or in private events or weddings or galas and singing outside in the French Quarter financially than I would in any club. And how I'm saying here in the clubs, I'm originally from Flint, Michigan. I grew up, I graduated from school early. I went to college at Alabama State. Then I lived in Chicago. Then I lived in New York. I was asked to come down here. Then I was in Switzerland for almost 10 years. And I was asked to come to New Orleans specifically by a friend that wanted to turn over a band leader gig to me. It took a year for me to say, okay, I'll return back to the States. I was a little hesitant. Like many that came before me, from Nina Simone to Josephine Baker to Tina Turner, it was the first time I really felt truly free when I left outside of America. Nobody was following me around in the stores. Nobody was telling me, oh, you're very well spoken for a Black girl. I didn't, all that stuff fell to the wayside. So I was very hesitant to return to America. I was like, oh gosh, I don't know if I want to go back. But as soon as I hit New Orleans, I fell in love. And the reason why you saw me singing outside is because at first other musicians would say, hey, Blue, do you want to come outside in the quarter and sing with us? And I was like, oh, I work in the clubs. I don't have to. I'm fine. Thank you. You know, and then as soon as I did it, I was like, oh, this money trumps these clubs and I'm free. There's a story that I can definitely share. I don't think this manager lives in New Orleans anymore, but I remember this one lady in the club when I was singing in the clubs saying, okay, Blue, when you sing, I want people to think and feel New Orleans. So I need you to sing Aretha Franklin songs. And of course, I looked at her and said, with all due respect, when people think of Aretha, they think of Detroit.
Right.
And I'll exactly. Never forget her telling me, her next response was, it's okay. You're Black. You can pull it off. Just was like, yeah. And I said, okay. And I smiled. She offered me some wine. I took it graciously. But in my head, I knew right then, yeah, I'm never coming back here. I heard that she's gone and left New Orleans. But I just thought, see, that's really uncomfortable for obvious reasons. And when I'm outside or even in a private event or a wedding, I can sing whatever I want, from Billie Holiday to Louis Armstrong to Aretha Franklin to singing in French to singing in Spanish to Patsy Cline to the Judds to Louis Armstrong. I can go on and on, and no one can tell me, no, you know, or, oh, ding, Aretha, you know? So, and like I said, the best feeling in the world is coming home and being able to pay real bills. Now in the clubs, by the time you get through doing a club gig in New Orleans, you're like, oh, okay, I can get a mani-pedi. Okay, maybe I can take myself out to eat and pay my phone bill. But when you get through singing outside and for private venues, I just performed at the Bucaray Gala here in the French Quarter. The Bucaray is the organization that you have to go to even ask permission to paint your house or change anything, any kind of structure. Okay. Yeah, because they're really into preserving the history and the buildings. You know, I think that's one of the many reasons New Orleans is such a fascinating place, because these homes and buildings are like 300 years old. Most other places are all like, just go forward. Don't look back. Just go forward. Modern, modern, modern. But New Orleans is like, no, how about preserving the history? So, that's another thing that helped me decide to be an independent artist and why I love it. I'm free. I feel really free. And here in New Orleans, also a little, because people ask all the time, you don't need a permit to busk. That word still is like, okay, you don't need a permit to play your music in the French Quarter. It's just first come, first serve. So what if I get a bill and I'm like, oh no, I owe this cable bill. I forgot about that. Or, oh, I need to go grab a new dress. Let me grab my little things, my microphone, my little stand with my Cash App, Venmo, PayPal, my little sign, and go out there and make that money and come home. Okay, bill paid. And I don't know anywhere else in America that you can do that. I really don't. I know that they do busk in other parts, but people, specifically tourists, come to New Orleans, excuse me, specifically looking to hear live music, and even more so jazz music. So I've seen people come and go like, oh, I'm going to come and make money too. And they're just singing something that I'm just sitting back that you could hear in any other city. It's very top 40 popish. And I'm like, okay. And then after a while, maybe a month, a couple of weeks, maybe a couple of days, you don't see them anymore. Cause I'm like, yeah, they don't get it. They are here for the genuine, sincere music. Of course I sing soul and other things, but jazz is my base and my foundation. Gospel actually is my foundation, but jazz comes a close second.
He's the kind of guy that you say, hey baby, let's get away. Let's go someplace far where I don't care. He's the kind of guy that you give your everything, your trust, your heart, share all of your love till death do us part. I wanna be where he wants me, when he wants me, and whenever he needs me. And when he's feeling lonesome and love starved, I'll be there to please him. Loving him a little bit more each day turns me right on just to hear him. Thank you.
I guess speaking about, I guess, the New Orleans culture overall, I know you did a live album at the New Orleans Jazz Museum.
Yes.
So how was that like? And what are your thoughts overall on the Jazz Museum itself?
Well, I'm very thankful to the Jazz Museum. Shout out to Greg and Katie. They do a lot in regards to having a platform for many artists here from the just many artists in New Orleans, specifically jazz. They do venture out here and there, but in general, it looks like the foundation is jazz, and that's very appreciative. They've been very kind to me. I performed there multiple times for, especially during COVID. They had a, what do they call it, quarantine or something, jazz quarantine. But where I played in my courtyard with the Preservation Hall Jazz Band as my backup, this album that you were speaking of specifically, Alicia Renee, AKA Blue Eyes. And for those that are listening and they don't know why my nickname is Blue Eyes, is because I was born African-American, brown, dark, complected sister with natural blue eyes. So I've always introduced myself as Alicia Renee since I was a child, but people would look at me and say, okay, I'm calling you Blue Eyes. So just to let you guys, listeners, know where the name comes from, it's not a gimmick. I'm not having a moment. This is just how my creator made me. But my live at the New Orleans Jazz Museum album is something I'm very proud of because it's with my 7-piece band. A lot of those musicians came from Preservation Hall Jazz Band. And it's a tribute to Louis Armstrong, Nina Simone, Billie Holiday, Ray Charles, Roy Hargrove, and a little Betty Carter. So I'm very proud of that. It has 12 songs on here, Nina Simone, just so many. Everything from I Put a Spell on You to by Nina Simone to God Bless the Child, Billie Holiday, When the Saints Go Marching In, I could go on and on. Just a lot of different songs. Georgia by Ray Charles. And yeah, it's an album I'm really proud of and thankful for.
And you said that you performed with the Preservation Jazz, well, Hall Jazz Band.
Yeah, Preservation Hall Jazz Band. Different times. Yeah, I'm very thankful. Shout out to Ben Jaffe. I performed at the Preservation Hall with them. They performed with me in my courtyard, as I mentioned. Very thankful. Again, another historically legendary New Orleans band that is just amazing and a dream to even be in the same room with all of those amazing musicians. And thankful that they even want to play with me, you know?
So how is it like collaborating with different musicians and how does it, I guess, impact how you think music-wise through your creativity?
It's an honor. I've played on many different projects from, I have a website. If you Google Alicia Renee, AKA Blue Eyes, you'll see like different videos and different albums that I played on from hip hop with Kool G Rap to, of course, live at the New Orleans Jazz Museum to Shaquille O'Neal's You Can't Stop the Rain when I was just coming out of my little teenage life. But that was a blessing. I have two songs on Shaq's album to reggae album, Strike ID, a T1E over in France, to working with the amazing Bill Laswell, who actually is the producer of Herbie Hancock's Rocket. I'm on about 4 different projects / albums with Bill Laswell. He's more like, I don't know how you explain it, more eclectic, to a very dear friend of mine that the Grammys actually honored, who passed away recently, Hurricane G. She's a hip hop artist, a Puerto Rican from the Bronx. So if I'm not mistaken, she was really one of the first, if not the first artist to write and perform not only in English, but in Spanish. And I'm honored to have 2 songs on her album, All Woman, which is on Ola Recordings, to I can go on and on. But it's beautiful because I love, first, communication. So I love communicating through different ways. I don't believe it's just one way you can communicate. And that's why I love to sing in different languages, speak in different languages, and definitely sing in different genres. Because I always say, oh, I'm not a one-dimensional artist. You can't just say, oh, I saw her. Or I always tell people, just because you saw me singing Billie Holiday, don't put me in the box and say, oh, well, that's what she is. And if you just catch me singing R&B, don't put me in a box and say, oh, that's, oh, I heard her sing R&B. She's an R&B artist. Or, oh, I heard her singing in French. I didn't hear anything else. I think she's a French art. No, that's the beauty of music and communications, that it can be very broad and not so one way, you know, one type of direction. So it's an honor to be able to, even recording with the Last Poets, Jessica Keir Moore.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask about. Yeah.
Yes. Shout out to Umar Ben Hassan and Abby O'Doon. Yes. That's the beauty of it. It's not just one way, you know, when it comes to creating.
Yeah. Performing or being associated with the Last Poets is just incredible, because they were just so heavily influential on like the future of spoken word and hip hop in itself and so many other genres. So it's just... When I saw that on your website, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, a huge honor. Huge honor. I remember when I first met them, I was in Manhattan, and a friend of mine was he's a professional photographer, was having a photo shoot with them. And so I had my hat pulled down low, covering my eyes. Uh-huh. And I'll never forget, Abby O'Doon walked up to me, took the hat off, and was like, listen, you are Black with natural bright blue eyes. Don't ever hide yourself. And immediately I just took to him, and they've been just beautiful people that I'm very thankful to have not only called friends but worked with. And it's actually Umar Ben Hassan of the Last Poets that introduced Bill Laswell and I to one another.
Oh, okay.
Because Bill Laswell has done production with the Last Poets as well.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, wow. So that's how I met the Last Poets. Yeah. I mean, that's how the met Bill Laswell, was through the Last Poets.
That's amazing. I guess with the blue eyes thing, I mean, I don't have blue eyes, I have gray eyes, but it's surprising how much attention that it gives you, because I don't know, sometimes I guess I forget myself. Mm-hmm. I'm a different eye color. Then people would just say, oh, I like your eye color. And I'm like, oh, you were looking at my eyes?
Yeah, and it's now because you're born that way. Like, I'm sure, I know I've learned, you learn the way people word it is exactly what they're thinking. If they say, I like your eye color, 9 times out of 10, I assume they think they're contacts. And you're like, thanks, I was born this way. You know, they're not contacts. There's nothing wrong with colored contacts. Absolutely not. But this is just the way I was born. And I guess you get people staring your whole life, staring at your eyes, and you feel someone staring, and you look up and you're like, oh, they're trying to just see if they see. Because at first, you know, I'll communicate like, hi. And they're like, oh, I was just trying to see if I saw a line. And I'm like, no, because I was born this way. There's no line, you know, in the eyeballs. But yeah, that's cool that we can relate to that, how people like stare or assume. Or sometimes, you know, you don't know, it could make you self-conscious, because like you said, you're just born this way and you forget, oh, they're looking at specifically this on me. And you're just like, why are they staring, you know? And they're like just looking at your eyes. So welcome. I am not the only one. Yes.
In the contacts, I didn't get that until later on, because I remember when I was younger, I didn't get that. Now everyone's like, oh, is that your real eye color? Why are you wearing contact with glasses on?
I had a brother approach me in Chicago. I will never forget two examples of that. Because it's the same for me. As a child, nobody asks, nobody second guessed. But when you grow up, they're like, oh, are you wearing contacts? And of course, it seems like everybody puts contacts on now. So they're assuming, oh, you're doing the same thing that everybody else is doing. And you're like, no, but I was actually born this way. But two times. One time a man approached me in Chicago downtown outside of Columbia College. And I had never met him. And he just was like, yes, sister, I want to apologize. And I was like, for what? You know? And he was saying that he was standing in a crowd and pointed me out and said, look at that girl over there. She doesn't need blue contacts. Why does she have blue contacts? And someone happened to know me and turned and corrected him and said, no, darling, those are her natural eyes.
That's Alicia, aka Blue Eyes.
Alicia Renee, aka Blue Eyes. And he apologized. So that's always stuck out in my head. And then one time I was in Harlem walking down the street, and some Hebrew Israelites were in Harlem, you know, on their platform. And the brother just literally, like, on the microphone or blowhorn, whatever, called himself calling me out and was like, "Yes, my sister, you need to take those contacts out of your eyes." And I just looked at him and smiled and said, "No, darling, unfortunately, you're incorrect because God made me this way. I was born this way." And I said, "Maybe you should do a little research on your history," because I felt like I had to get a little sassiness in. I went to Catholic school, so I had to get a look, because, you know, their whole thing is we're teaching you about history, but here comes a Black woman walking down the street and you're on the blowhorn, quote unquote, calling her out for something she didn't even do, you know, or something she's not even, you know. I'm not a sister walking down the street with blue contacts. I'm born this way. And I'll never forget, people around sort of snickered and giggled, like, "Oh, she just, you know, made him." And he was like, "I apologize, my sister," you know. But those are two moments that stand out when it comes to that. Yeah.
It shouldn't even have to be like that either.
It shouldn't. No, it should not.
Yeah.
That's all right.
So another, like, big thing that happened and that you were part of was the New Orleans City Council voting to pass an ordinance that provided musicians hired by the city minimum pay. So how was it like trying to fight or be vocal on that, or trying to get that passed?
Well, I have to give all the credit to MACNO. MACNO is amazing. I want to be specific to say what the letters MACNO are for. MACNO, another thing about New Orleans, this city, in my opinion, they really, and I've lived a lot of places, New York, Chicago, Atlanta, Switzerland, they really go out of their way, in my opinion, to protect and take care of the musicians. Here it is. MACNO stands for Music Culture 504. And they are there to make sure that they protect the street artist. I hate that word, street artist, but I know it helps make it simple for everybody to understand what I'm talking about. But the street artist and just the musicians of New Orleans in themselves. So MACNO did a great job of really putting that into motion. And a lot of the musicians, including myself, definitely did show up because there are strength in numbers and strength in familiar faces. And I showed up to the city council on the day that they made the decision, are we going to change this law? And now they changed the law to no minimum than $200 per hour for each musician, not for the band, $200 for each musician. Anything that has to be affiliated with, hired, or sponsored by the city. So that's a great thing. And that's just the beginning, because like I was saying earlier, I prefer to sing outside and do the private events, weddings, et cetera, festivals, galas, et cetera, because the financial compensation is a lot better. And I just recently, this year, did not know how specifically bad it is, but it was. But the musicians in the clubs are still receiving the exact same pay that they were receiving 30 years ago. And that blew my mind, because I was like, I'm not going to come to America to suffer. I'm chilling in Switzerland, one of the wealthiest countries in the world. I'm living well. I'm eating well. I get to sing. They really appreciate me. I love it. I can go over to France and all that. So when I came back, that was another, you know, concern. Like, oh, I'm not coming back here to struggle. Oh, I'm an independent artist. You know, no. So I was very thankful. Like I said, the musicians clinic, they take care of, if you're a musician here, you get to choose your health insurance. MACNO, they're the ones that helped change that law. There was a law that I also for the last 3 years really worked hard at, and there were two executive producers, Mark Ty Turner from E Television, as well as Brad Bohannon. I hope I don't mess his name up, but he was on Bar Rescue, Naked and Afraid. He owned restaurants in the quarter. And they brought to my attention a few years ago this insane law that since the 1970s, only one food cart vendor was allowed in the French Quarter. and it was a hot dog vendor. And we thought, well, that's strange. When people get off the plane in New Orleans, no one's asking, take me to the closest hot dog. They're looking for gumbo, shrimp po' boys, etouffee, jambalaya.
Yeah.
They're looking for New Orleans food. So to make a long story short, for three years, they asked me if I would be the host and the narrator of this documentary that is now streaming on Amazon Prime, and it's titled Dirty Dogs. Again, the name of the documentary is Dirty Dogs, and spelled just like it sounds, and it's streaming on Amazon Prime. We had meetings with the city council, the mayor, the governor, politicians, the Vu Corée, again, the same organization. We even have to, you know, they have to give permission for any and everything that goes down in the French Quarter, from how you build your house to your restaurants to what goes on in the streets. And as of November 2023, the law was overturned. And now there are up to 30 licenses for food cart vendors to sell their own food in the French Quarter, with the possibility of eventually, hopefully, even having their own brick and mortar. So, I love singing. I love music. I'm very thankful for it. But a few years ago, and I do believe in prayer and manifestation, I started like just speaking, hey, I love singing, but I'm not put on this light on this earth just to, oh, look at me, I can sing. I need to do more. I went to college for communications. I speak five languages. I need to do more. And they approached me on my birthday in the French Quarter. And that's how that came into fruition. I was able to introduce them to many of the food cart vendors that serve the mayor, to all these great places, but they're kept outside of the French Quarter. And so they were like, well, since you're able to introduce us to all these great chefs and cooks of New Orleans, you know, for this documentary, we're going to add in the contract the title of producer as well, because you're really helping produce it. So that's Dirty Dogs, the documentary that's out now. It just started streaming on Amazon at the end of this month, which is September right now. But definitely check it out. I'm very proud of that. And that really helped change. And the very first food cart vendor that set up on St. Louis and Bourbon was born and raised. Yeah, New Orleans, Glizzy's by Papa. So shout out to Glizzy's by Papa. And yeah, there are more and more coming as we speak, you know, that are out there now in the French Quarter, not just since the 1970s. Again, one food cart vendor had the complete monopoly on the French Quarter. Oh, now that has changed.
Okay. That's good. That's some good information to know. Okay.
Yeah.
So, because you were talking about working on the documentary and Dirty Dogs, communication played like a huge role in it. So how has, kind of technically spoken it a little bit, like throughout the interview, but how has communication helped you just navigate throughout life and knowing five languages?
Yes.
Like how has that been? How has that experience been when interacting with other people or people who speak different languages too?
First, I think it kills the stereotype. And I always said I was going to get a t-shirt that says kill the stereotype, but I really should. Don't anybody take that idea. But, but I mean, it helps because to say it bluntly, most people outside of America look at as Americans are, oh, they only speak one language, and okay, they look at us, that's very lazy. Because when I've left America, it's normal for the average person to speak minimum three different languages. And I was just like, oh, and I've always loved, again, communications and languages. So it's really helped. I mean, there were times I was in New York and I'm getting off the airport and I get in the cab and I was raised correctly. So I say, please take me to Manhattan. Thank you. He will turn around and smile at me like, oh, he's got one. You know, and that's how I looked at it. Like, oh, I can take advantage of her. She's not from here. I can ask her which bridge should I take and take the long way and get more money. And as soon as I hear an accent, I just go into it like, oh, tu parles français? And it changes everything.
What the heck?
They're like, oui, pourquoi? You know, they're like, why do you know? How do you know this French? And I'm like, hello, you know. Or if I hear Italian, ah, tu parlo italiano, you know, or ah, tu spreche Deutsch. It just changes. You see, they the whole way they look at you changes. And they're like, wow, where are you from? And I say, I'm from America. No, but before then, because they're saying that because, you know, they're thinking, no, Americans don't speak more than one language. And I'm like, yes, I love life, you know, and I want to respect everybody and learn as many cultures as possible. When in Rome, hello, and when I left and wanted to speak different languages, people were very shocked and surprised and would even question, why do you want to learn our language? You're American. Most Americans come over here and get very angry if people don't speak English. And I thought, I'll never forget, I thought, the first time I heard that, I thought, oh my gosh, that's where we get, that's horrible. But I thought of two things at the same time, simultaneously. There was an era in America where all you heard people were saying were like, speak English, speak English. And I was just like, oh, that's so rude, number one. But then how dare you go to another country and become angry if someone in another country can't speak English? And that's when I thought, oh, that's where the, maybe this is one of the reasons why they've coined the term the ugly American. So again, I want to kill stereotypes and show, hey, we're not all one way. We're not all one type of mentality. You know, please do not, you know, do not put me in that box, you know, kill the stereotype. And it helps a lot. It really does. People just seem to, oh my gosh, look at you different and want to engage more with you.
Yes, I want to be in a number.
Blue Eyes.
We are back. On 91.7 FM, the Wax R, the audio box of Devin Jermaine. I'm here with Alicia Renee, aka Blue Eyes.
Hey.
And yeah, thank you for being the guest.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I guess because I do like to ask this because sometimes, you know, interviews can seem so heavily music based. But what are some things that you like to do outside of music? Like, what are your hobbies that you like to do?
Visiting museums, getting on a plane, traveling, going to Atlanta, just for a little getaway, or Chicago, or New York, just for a getaway, seeing friends and family that I haven't seen in a long time, reading books, turning off all of this technology that we're so used to dealing with from morning until night, and just opening a good book and reading, really, or if I feel like it, a documentary. I love watching documentaries. I love watch, like you said, when it has to do with, because I know what I'm doing. I'm taking myself away from everything music related and just being, you know?
Yeah, because sometimes you need a break from, like, that can go for any hobby or something that you do. Yeah. No matter how much you like it, sometimes you need a break from it, because sometimes it can get pretty overwhelming.
Yeah, and I think everybody needs a balance. We all need balance in life. If you do too much of anything, it could just be a burnout situation, overkill. And you're just like, okay, you know, let me watch a good documentary that has nothing to do with music. Let me go to the museum and just look at some beautiful art. Let me call my sister or my family and just talk about what's going on in the world. And, you know.
Do you have a favorite author or documentary, Emma? I know it's on the spot asking.
No. I don't have a favorite. I was just telling a friend about this Prince interview where Chris Rock asked Prince, what's your favorite art? Who's your favorite artist? And he said, you know, I can't answer that question because that's like saying, who did God give the better gift to? And I don't think God works that way. Regardless if you believe in Allah, Jah, God, whatever name you want to use, I agree with that. So there are a few authors that I love. I love bell hooks. There are a lot of different authors that I like. Bell hooks, Toni Morrison, Maya Angelou, Cicely Tyson has an amazing book about her life, which is just great. There are many different authors that I love. I can go on and on. But yeah, those are some of the top that come to my mind, top authors.
And then that's funny. It can go like, technically, you can be taking a break from it, but then it can kind of do like a 180 or 360. Can you be like, oh yeah, this is kind of like inspiration for artistry too.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I want to thank you for taking the time out to interview, especially because I know last week it was a lot going on. Hurricane Helene.
Yeah, Hurricane Francine. Happened. Thankfully, I was okay, although 400,000 Louisiana residents did go without power. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody's pretty much back okay, if I'm not mistaken. Don't quote me. But that was a little bit, you know, everybody running to the stores and are we going to have to emergency evacuate and all this stuff. But we turned out okay.
And there weren't any, I don't think there were any deaths from it, right?
No, like, not that. I think everybody turned out okay.
Okay. Because I saw in the news it was a car, like someone had to save someone from a car.
Yeah, that went viral. Yeah, because you know, a lot of people are who they are. They tell you the day before, don't go out driving. Please don't do it. And they do it. And now, oh, we have to rescue this person. You know, I guess, you know, some people always feel like, well, I'll be all right. It's not going to happen to me. My truck is blah, blah, blah. My car, I'm just need to get this. I need to, okay, now you're on the news being rescued. So fortunately, that did happen. He was rescued and was okay.
That's good. And yeah, I'll still keep prayers up for New Orleans because I know everything's trying to kind of go back to normal overall. And a lot of people have gained the power back, but it's still some recovery that needs to be done.
Yeah. And it is hurricane season. So
what are some of the best contacts? Because I forget how to say this sometimes. What are some of the best ways people can get in contact with you or your social medias?
Okay. I have a website. If you Google Alicia Renee, aka Blue Eyes, my website is the very first thing that pops up, or one of the very first things. Again, Alicia Renee, aka Blue Eyes, not, oh, Alicia Renee, not Blue Eyes, not Alicia Blue, not Alicia Blue Renee. Alicia Renee, Alicia Renee, aka, which stands for also known as Blue Eyes. Everything will pop up. My Instagram, my YouTube channel, which has over 24,000 subscribers so far and counting, close to 6 million views in total. But to contact me, I have an Instagram page, Facebook. Definitely check me out on TikTok. I'm trying to build my little TikTok up right now. But yeah, if you put in Alicia Renee, aka Blue Eyes, literally the first page on Google, everything I just said, from YouTube to Instagram to Facebook, and of course at the very top, my website will have all that information, my email address where you can contact me, for whatever, private events, weddings, galas, festivals, whatever, birthday parties, I'm here for it. So yeah, just Google Alicia Renee, aka Blue Eyes, and literally everything will pop up on the first Google page.
From there. Okay, awesome. Everybody, thank you for tuning in to this special episode of the Audio Box with Devin Jermaine. I'm doing an interview with New Orleans legendary Alicia Renee, aka Blue Eyes.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really, really an honor.
Okay, awesome. Well, hopefully we can meet again in person if I ever do swing by New Orleans again.
Yes, you gotta come back. You gotta come back. Try some of these new food cart vendors in the French Quarter.
See,
Try
yeah,
all
I
you can.
definitely want to do that because I love seafood.
Yes.
Awesome. Okay. Well,
And
thank
they
you
do have
again.
vegetarian meals as well around here in the
Oh, okay.
quarter, including Glizzy's by Papa. I think he has a veggie meal or something as well. But yeah, Glizzy's by Papa, Dirty Dogs on Amazon Prime streaming right
Yeah.
now. Alicia Renee, aka Blue Eyes, just go to Google and my website will pop up, and Instagram and Facebook and TikTok and YouTube, all that pops up on the first page if you put in Alicia Renee, aka Blue Eyes.
Awesome.
And if
Thank
you're in New
you again.
Orleans, for whoever's listening,
Oh,
never,
yes.
please feel free to say hi. I'm definitely a person that loves to communicate with the people. Regardless, if you just want to know where's the best restaurant, museum, where's the great band playing tonight, I'm always an email or a DM away.
Awesome. Then, if you're in the French Quarter too, you can
Yeah.
go check out, Alicia Renee, aka Blue Eyes too.
Yes,
I see
I
her
will be.
performing.
Yeah, come on through. Stop by and say hi.
Awesome. We'll see you next time on the Audio Box, everybody.
your summer kisses.